Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit olathekia.com.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as we finish strong here in the 5 o'clock hour. The man who called Game 5, he'll call Game 6, and maybe are we looking at a Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals? We call him the Voice of America from CBS TNT. Westwood One, he is Kevin Harlan. He joins us here in the program right now. Kevin, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great, Saran. Always good to hear your voice. And I'm on the road. It's a familiar voice from back home, so I always enjoy when we visit here on these Fridays.
Yes, listen, did you think when it was 4-0 that you'd be, you know, traveling back to Miami for a Game 6? Did you think, or at 3-0 maybe even I should ask, are you surprised the Celtics have gotten off the mat the way they did?
You know, they had the second best record in the NBA this season, one win and back in Milwaukee, which was the number one seed. And you knew at some time it was going to click in. They just had too much talent. They got two of the top 10 players in the NBA. They've got depth. They've got some rotational balance. They've got an answer for whatever they're facing that night, whether it's a slow-up game or a fast game, a rugged game, or a shooting three-point spree. I think that we all figured that Austin would get back in this thing somehow, but they've been devastatingly good the last two games after falling back 3-0. And now they're one of, I think, let me see what it is, 15 teams that have taken it to a game six after being down 3-0 in the history of the NBA playoffs. When a team in a playoff series is going up 3-0, it is 150-0. No team ever in NBA history has come back from being down 3-0. Boston has won 2 in a row, one in Miami, one last night here in Boston, and now they are going down to Game 6 tomorrow night in Florida, and a chance to tie it up. And for the Heat, it would be truly like a seventh game, because if they come back here to Boston for Game 7, it may be curtains and end this Cinderella ride they've been on. So, it's happened 4 times in the NHL playoffs. And when a team's come back from 3-0 in a series, and the last time it happened in Major League Baseball, and maybe the only time it's happened in baseball.
Only time.
Is back in 2004 when the Red Sox were down to the Yankees, came back and beat New York, and then won the World Series back in 2004, as we remember. So it hasn't happened often. We've got the makings of it in this series right now.
Yeah, and it's very similar to that Red Sox-Yankees series because, as we know, all Yankee fans' parents and grandparents live in Florida. So it's really like, playing the same kind of teams,
yeah.
Right? As everyone in New York retires to Florida. So yeah, very similar outlay here. Would we call it a choke for Miami if they don't pull this off, or is it just like, is that unfair? Is it like they had no business being up 3-0 and they should be celebrated for that? The Celtics should be, admonished for not playing better earlier. Like, I always love, if you're up 3-0, you're supposed to win. And you mentioned for all the reasons, 150-0 in the history of the NBA. But has Boston been the better team all along? And Miami just deserves credit for exploiting matchups and, doing the little things to get up to 3-0. But this is where Boston probably has been definitively, we know by the regular season record they were. But should we not be as surprised as many people seem to be?
Well, Miami, I think it's stunning that they're here. Remember, they had to play 2 play-in games just to get into the NBA playoffs. And in the play-in games, they lost the first one and then had to play a second one and were trailing with 3 minutes left in the game in the second one and to Chicago. So they almost didn't get in at all. They had a season riddled with injuries. They really weren't whole until well after the All-Star break. And then they kind of got their traction and began to move. and were lucky to win, you know, the 44 games and finish 44-38. So, you know, it was a miracle they probably got here in the first place. They were an 8 seed. And, of course, being an 8 seed, your gift making the playoffs is playing the 1 seed. And so they played Milwaukee, the number one overall seed in the NBA tournament here, and they've got a win in 5 games over the Bucks. Now, granted, Giannis Antetokounmpo was injured for 2.5 of those games, but nonetheless, Miami won. And so they win against a 1 seed, so they knock out a 1. Then they played a heated rival in the New York Knicks in what was an ugly series. But they beat the Knicks, who were kind of riding high after beating Cleveland and Donovan Mitchell. And then they get to face Boston, which had struggled a little bit in the first round against Atlanta. They went 7 games against James Harden, Joel Embiid, and Philadelphia, and came into this series thinking, well, it's an 8 seed. We should handle them. And they quickly fall back 3-0. So it's more on Boston just trying to figure out what they're all about. During the regular season, they led the Eastern Conference from mid-November through February. And they really looked good. And then they kind of took their foot off the gas a little bit and worked on some different things. And you remember how the season began for Boston. They had this coach, Udoka, who was caught in an off-the-court issue with another employee for the Celtics. They suspended him, and they hired this guy named Joe Mazzulla, who was a second-row assistant. He wasn't even in the front row for their games. He was in the second row, the back row, where the assistants and the scouts will sit. He was 34. He had only been a head coach at the Division II level. And, you know, with training camp starting the next day, Boston had to make a decision. And so they picked this Joe Mazzulla. And if the name sounds familiar, he was a Final Four point guard for Bob Huggins at West Virginia a couple of years ago, 10 years ago. So he took over, and they got off to a pretty good start, 18-4. Were number one in the Eastern Conference until after the All-Star break. And then they became the number 2 seed, the second best team overall in the NBA, and the number 1 net rating. They had a top 3 offense, a top 3 defense. So they were coming in thinking, you know what? You know, we'll go against Milwaukee. And that's what everybody was thinking. No one had Miami on the radar at all. And then Miami began to get some Jimmy Butler performances. They were sneaking up on teams. They were so well coached by Eric Spoelstra. And voila, here they are. And they have really pushed Boston to the limit. But game 6 tomorrow, if Miami doesn't win that, they're going to be in dire straits, because that really is their game 7. If they got to come back to Boston for a game 7, man, that's harness yourself in, because it will be a rough ride.
Why do the, and we're talking to Kevin Harlan here in the program, why do the Celtics, until recently, why have they struggled at home? What's been, you know, even in sometimes calling out their fans that the Garden's not loud enough, what's been the disconnect there?
I don't know. That's a great question. They're 5-5, winning last night. They finally even the record this year in the playoffs. So they're 5-5. I don't know if it's we know we're better than you and we're just kind of going through the motions. I have no idea. They weren't doing the things they were doing in the regular season, namely hitting 3-point shots. They had been one of the best 3-point shooting teams in the league in the first 3 months of the season, and that had carried them and kind of became their identity. I guess if there's one thing, aside from not hitting threes, which they've now started to hit, they're really looking great, is they weren't playing the kind of defense a year ago that made them so ridiculously good. And a team that played, as you recall, in the NBA Finals against the Golden State Warriors. So their defense has not been what it was. And maybe some of those principles, either they were becoming lax. You know, it's hard to play defense. It takes a lot of effort. And sometimes when your outlet, your path is helped by hitting threes, you let your foot off the gas a little bit on the defensive end when you know you can hit so many threes. But if you rely on that 3-point shot, like the Celtics have been and are right now, and don't couple it with defense, you're in trouble. And that probably was most of the problem. They were not playing the kind of defense that got them to the finals last year and to the second-best record in the league this year.
Yeah, it is. It is. And Jason Tatum, this was supposed to be his coming out party, right? Especially once the Sixers were out of the way. This was supposed to be in the Bucks, really, I guess, maybe as the one seed. This was supposed to be his chance. You know, he said, I'm humbly one of the greatest players in the world, right? Which we talked about is like, you can't have those two things together. You can either be one of the greatest players in the world or you can be humble. Which I don't mind. I'm not admonishing him. I think you have to have that mindset to be great in a sport as highly competitive and athletic as the NBA is. But he is, you know, you see when they're going good and when he's going good, you know, he is truly one of the best players in the league. And he's probably the most underrated player in the league because he never gets talked about for the MVP, but he is the engine of that team. Jaylen Brown puts up really good numbers, but Jaylen Brown is definitely Robin to the Batman that is Jason Tatum, correct?
Yeah, but they're two of the top 10 players in the league because Tatum was first-team All-NBA and Brown was second-team All-NBA. So you're talking about two of the top 10 players in the entire league, maybe in the world, that are on the same team. And they have not found a hard time coexisting. It's been a big topic in Boston about, you know, they're both going to make a ton of money. And you think it in those two, it does that pairing work? I would say absolutely it works, and they like each other, and they want to stay together, and it just kind of hit at a bad time that Jaylen Brown kind of hit a trough. He was not shooting all that well, affecting his defense. He had not played well in the series until the last two games. And Tatum, I think, at one time was averaging 30, 10, and 5. 30 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists in these playoffs. And with that in mind, only 6 players in NBA playoff history had ever done that. 30, 10, and 5 in a playoff overall, all the different series. And it just so happens that 2 of the 6 players that have done that all time have played this year. Jokic with Denver, and they're going to the finals after winning the Western Conference over the Lakers in a sweep. And Jason Tatum. So we're seeing a historic performance. It's interesting. In the NBA, as you know, Saren, every night you expect excellence. Every night you expect a performance that's a 100. And it's hard to do. Defenses are there geared to slow you down. And they will throw as many bodies at you as they can to slow you down. So some nights it's just not your night either. You don't have the stroke. You can't hit the shot. So I guess I just feel like these two guys make sense, and they're going to have to pay each the max. They're going to have to pay Brown the max. He comes up this summer. But as constructed, they're a terrific team. They'll always change the parts around them. And the heart and soul of the team is Marcus Smart. But those two kids are, you know, they're two All-NBA wings. Those are hard guys to find, and they can play defense, and that's an added bonus when you talk about the best of the best.
There's a lot of speculation that they won't, you know, whether or not they will. I won't say that, you know, people are betting on that they won't, but some people think that Jaylen Brown's not going to be back. You think they will keep both of them?
I do. I think they're gonna pay both. It behooves them to take both. I don't think you're going to get kind of value back that you want for Brown. He is a terrific, I hate to say complimentary part, Tatum is such a big name and such a big-time player. He's already scored more points in his first 6 years, totally. He scored more points in his first 6 years in the playoffs than any player before him. And think that. Now think of all the greats, the Jordans and the Wilt Chamberlains and the Kareem Abdul-Jabbars and Kobe and Michael, like all these guys, Brown or Tatum has scored more than all of them through 6 years. So, he's off to a running start. He's a generational talent. And Brown is an all-star, second-team All-NBA, comfortable with his role, doesn't need to be the alpha, enjoys being, if he's not one, he's 1A. On any given night, they complement each other, and one or the other becomes the star, the leading scorer. I think everything is pointing to them re-signing him. Yeah. But it'll be expensive. It'll be really expensive.
Yeah. Can we just take a minute to mention that Tyler Hero has not played for the Heat, and he's a 20-point scorer and one of their, you know, three cogs, and yet here they are. I mean, it still up 3-2 with a chance to close out and go to the finals. Like, I think people forget that when they talk about the Heat. Like, you know, who if Jaylen Brown's down, are they Celtics anywhere to be found? I mean, it is still remarkable what the Heat have done, even if they do end up giving this thing up. I think too often people forget, you know, are forgetting. It's because out of sight, out of mind. He hadn't been around for so long, but that's a huge piece to lose.
Well, you hit on a big point. They were down two starters last night.
Yeah,
and really, and they've got. I've mentioned this before. Miami has got four undrafted rotational players, four players that did not get drafted in the first or second round, the two rounds of the NBA draft, and were signed off the street. A couple guys are two-way players that have bounced from one team to the next, and yet they are important players for Miami because they're in the right system, coached the right way, and have performed and come up through this Heat system. The Miami Heat culture is famed in the NBA for what they do to players that seem to be kicked to the curb, don't have the kind of appeal and metrics that you're looking for in an NBA player, but they see something, and they grab those players, and they develop them, and they play them. And that's a big part of what they're all about. So we're talking about a team in, you know, Boston that is truly part of the Habs, and a team in Miami that is truly a team. They have all the different things you want. They've got a couple superstars in their center, Bam Adebayo and certainly Jimmy Butler. They've got nice mid-level players that are nice players, but maybe not stars. And they got these undrafted kids, Duncan Robinson, who played at Michigan, Max Strus, who played at DePaul after playing Division II. Robinson played Division III before he transferred from Williams to Michigan. I mean, so they got these kids that really no one else wanted to take much of a chance on, got tries, and then were waived and picked up by Miami. So the coaching and the way they develop their players is really it.
That is Kevin Harlan. He'll have the call of Game 6 tomorrow night for TNT. You can, of course, hear Game 6 and Game 7, if necessary, right here on the home of the NBA playoffs, Sports Radio 810 WHB. We will take a break. We come back. We'll talk more with Kevin Harlan. I want to get into the new rule, the kickoff rule. What does Kevin think about that? And is he surprised by the fact that Andy Reid isn't on board with it? We'll touch on that. Also get to our Final Four. It's all coming up next with the great Kevin Harlan from CBS TNT Westwood One. He's only right here in the program. Welcome back here in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you as we take you up till 6 o'clock. Of course, we talk to the great Kevin Harlan in the 5 o'clock hour, always finishing strong on a Friday. The voice of America, CBS, TNT, Westwood One. You hear him everywhere right now. You hear him on the call of the Eastern Conference Finals. And Kevin, I want to switch gears to some football. The NFL announcing that fair catches inside the 25 will be brought out to the 25. Andy Reid didn't like this, said he doesn't want to, you know, turn this into flag football. I was a little bit surprised because I think his team benefits from this. You know, we went through the roster year over year and you looked at some of these linebackers and you're like, you know, does this guy play? Yeah, you look back, they covered kicks, right? Whether it's a linebacker or tight end, you know, those positions that really don't have an effect. Where now the Chiefs have a couple of guys, John Ross, who was the fastest guy ever in the 40-yard dash at the Combine in 2017, was picked one pick in front of Patrick Mahomes. Justin Ross had that great freshman season for Clemson, but has battled injuries. They carried him last year after another surgery. Those are guys that probably don't make this roster if you think everybody's bringing the kicks out, if you got to have a bunch of specialty players. Whereas if kind of kickoffs go away, maybe you can keep another weapon. You know, they got down to a point in that AFC Championship game. People may not remember, but they had, you know, Noah Gray, Marcus Kemp, I think it was Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and Jody Fortson out there. You know, one of the tight ends was playing wide out. And they really bogged down as an offense. It would have been nice to have another wide receiver. I'm just a little surprised at the reaction of Andy Reid. Are you?
You know, I guess I look at it in two ways. First of all, you know, it's done because of health. And I don't know if it's speeding up the game. Probably has a little bit of a component there. But, I mean, they're worried about the concussion, the head trauma, and that is all understandable, and they think it's going to cut it by a double-digit percentage by taking that portion and altering it. And I understand that. I guess I'm not in favor of anything that takes strategy out of the game and roster construction. When you've got that component that you've got to deal with, as you just illustrated, your roster looks different, and the kind of guy you keep is different, but you've got to keep him because you need to fill this particular aspect, that column of special teams. The you know, all three phases of the game that we hear coaches talk about all the time, you know, sometimes in a tight game, these kind of strategic moves with the punter and the cover men and the gunners and all the different things, the return people, where they are, when they let it go, when they keep it, like all that stuff is all a part of strategy. And I just think anything that takes strategy out of the game becomes maybe less interesting and becomes more, you yawn and look the other way, and all right, we know what's going to happen, and you just take it for granted. Whereas if you've always got that one element of, gosh, the guy fumbles, the guy does this, well, you know, like a thousand things can happen. And I just think anytime you take strategy out of any football or otherwise, takes away from the things that make it so appealing, all the different dominoes that could fall. One thing could trigger another. It could trigger five. It could trigger 10 things that make a game turn out the way it does, as opposed to, you know, keeping that strategic element in there about roster construction and what a play like that could mean in a game. A fair catch, or you let it go, or you return it, or who knows, or muffed, or whatever. All of these things all play into, you know, what it's all about. So I guess I feel like I'm going to side, I think, here with Coach Reed. Listen, I'm for the head trauma alert, and I'm for anything that cuts that down. And every day the NFL wakes up thinking, how can we make it safer for the players? This is one way they feel they can make it safer. And I get that. And maybe there is an overabundance of fair catches and time wasted on punts like that, or plays like that, that make it, you know, revert to the 25-yard line. But I guess I just kind of like kickoffs now. Every kickoff that, you know, you're just letting them go. I mean, it's just all the time these guys basically are just letting the kick go into the end zone, starting at the 25 and going from there. I guess I'd like to see some strategic element remain in the game.
Yeah, and to be clear, listen, I love the kick return and the punt return. I love the stats. I don't like the idea that, like, okay, every kick return and punt return record is now static. Like, it's never going to change because we don't do it anymore. I do think they're headed towards eliminating the kickoff. I don't like it, but I think it's where they're headed. I'm just, for Andy Reid and his team right now, I think they actually benefit from it, you know, more than anybody.
Yeah, I get your point. You're right. I mean, you are dead right. You're absolutely right.
It can
help a team. You're taking like three or four guys that are just there to be guys on special teams, and you're putting them with more skill. I totally understand your point. Absolutely.
One of the other things that was real subtle, in fact, I haven't heard anybody even mention it other than we did the other day, and I don't know, maybe I bored somebody by mentioning it, but I thought it was interesting that the NFL assigned more teams. First of all, I didn't know that you could just put your hand in the air and be added on. I think the Falcons were added as a team that calls Germany its territory, these international territorial rights, which I think we're up to, I think there's 12 teams that don't have any territorial rights, that they haven't leaned into that. The Chiefs are way leaning into it. They already had Germany, and they added Austria and Switzerland. And, you know, I read one thing, and I need to do some digging and haven't had a chance to do it yet with the Chiefs, but that the Chiefs are looking at this and saying, look, we have Patrick Mahomes. We have the most dynamic player on the earth. We are the dominant team, and we are going to maximize this run. As football is growing, we're going to put Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs logo in front of everybody, and we are going to basically give rise to a generation of Chiefs fans internationally. I think they, more than anybody, are leaning into it. And I think if you're a Chiefs fan, and I know people are upset because they're losing a home game, which I don't even like saying it that way, because the NFL said when they added the 17th game that, you know, a lot of the reason was because it would give them the flexibility and the ability to have more international games. And so everybody should have known that this was coming. But by doing this, the Chiefs are cultivating, going over and playing in Germany, and I think they'll be willing to go do this more than other teams. But by going over and doing that, they're cultivating fans, and they're not a team that is cash rich, right? One of the underrated things in this league is the ability to splash cash around, big, fat signing bonuses. That oftentimes is the difference in free agency. Dallas has a ton of cash because of that stadium, their market size, the revenue that they produce outside what is the shared revenue. They have more cash on hand. This is the Chiefs trying to be proactive, and I know, oh, it's just more money in Clark Hunt's pockets. Well, yes, I mean, and that's what every business is about, so, you know, geez, shame on them for being like every other business, but it also gives them the ability to have more cash, which can help them out in free agency. I think their work overseas is one of the more underrated things that's out there, and I think there is a definitive football benefit to it that people don't realize, you know, how much the Chiefs are in a little bit of a bind compared to the big market teams as far as the cash that they can throw around on signing bonuses and free agency. They're just not as cash rich as these other teams, and this is a way to try to close that gap.
Well, thank goodness that Clark and Mark Donovan and all those people that are involved in this organization, those are the two people that lead it, but that they are looking always beyond and outside. And you've got to. Kansas City is a mid-market franchise, so your point on the money is good. The league has got an eye on Europe that is growing stronger literally by the minute. Every game played over there is an event. Every game is sold out. Millions are made. The viewership continues to increase. You cannot deny the interest and the involvement that Europe is going to have in the future of the NFL. Would it surprise me in 15 to 20 years if there are four teams over there playing? Absolutely not. You could send a team like the Chiefs over there. They could play three straight weeks over in Europe, and then those teams come back over here to the States. You could have a division over there, and if you play each other twice, that takes up, you know, almost half your schedule. If it's not coming, it's being planned, and it could be right on the doorstep. And I just think with the proliferation of all the games, now Germany being flexed into a position of prominence as London has, that this is only going to grow. Yeah. So it only behooves you to make those kinds of moves and be ahead of it, or at least certainly stay pace with it and make sure that you are at the forefront of all this involvement and trying to claim, as you say, your territory, as the league has probably stipulated. But it's coming, and it's going to get bigger. And so we should just get used to it. And if they do add another game, which is, you know, highly possible, knock out another preseason game, making an even 18-game season, it'll be even more of a likelihood that this is going to happen. So I give credit to the Chiefs. You're always looking for new ways to get revenue. The stadium that, you know, the Royals are looking at and what the Chiefs may do and what will happen to Kauffman and all the things out there. All these teams are building like, and if you haven't been around in New England or Green Bay, or they're building like districts around these football stadiums, making them more than just a, you know, 10-date, you know, on the calendar year of where to go when they play those home games. They want to make it a year-round destination with things to do and everything 24/7, Chiefs or Packers or Patriots, wherever it is. That has become a big thing in the NFL. The money is there. It's been done twice. It's being increased by other teams who are looking into it. And Los Angeles, with what they've done with that big stadium and how they're trying to extend their reach outside in the blocks in the area around that stadium and make it a district with hotels and restaurants and things to do, all tied into the Chargers and Rams. You know, all that stuff, that's happening. That's part of how these teams are going to make more money. Listen, as a small 30-second story, Green Bay was going to go broke in 2001. If they did not renovate their stadium, add a huge addition to the outside, you know, build all these different restaurants and things in the atrium at Lambeau Field. They have since bought the four blocks that were adjacent to Lambeau and cleared those and built office space and condos and restaurants and entertainment areas, places for kids and families and adults to go and enjoy themselves. And that was because they don't have an owner. So they had to make money some way. And that's the way they make it outside of football. So it's all a part of the master plan. And Clark Hunt and Mark Donovan are looking at that same thing at Arrowhead out there or over in Kansas or wherever their stadium will be in 25 or 30 years. All that is being talked about as we speak right now.
Kevin Harlan is with us from CBS, TNT, Westwood One. He'll call game six of the Celtics and Heat, game seven as well, if necessary. Let's get to our final four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you suffer an orthopedic injury in everyday life or playing sports, the University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care right there at 435 and all in Overland Park. If you got a youth athlete playing Friday night sports, they got an injury, you can get them in there Saturday mornings, 8 to 2. They're open weekdays, 8 to 7, but Saturday mornings open 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. as well. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics. Kevin, I'll start you with this. Have you ever been to the Indianapolis 500?
No, and I want to go. I want to go to that. I've not been to a Masters, not been to a Kentucky Derby. All on the bucket list. Those are three things I definitely want to do and will try my hardest to do them. They kind of conflict with my schedule. I'd love to go to an Indy 500, though. I think it'd be thrilling.
Yeah, I want to do that as well. I've been to the Kentucky Derby of the ones you said. I haven't been to the Masters. Would like to do that. I also want to go to Monaco. I'm a big F1 fan, so
wouldn't that be fun?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Just, you know, just your average everyday little jaunt to Monaco. You know, no big deal. I heard rooms.
They've got that in Miami, Saran. You know,
yes.
Around the Dolphin Stadium, they've built the track, and that has become a huge deal down in Miami and brings in a lot of money, attracts the rich and famous, hundreds of thousands of people. But Miami and the Formula One thing, that has been a match in heaven, much like in Monaco. So that is growing. And if you ever want to go and you can't get overseas, try going to the one in Miami because they say it is a blast.
Yeah, I'll just hop on the jet with Patrick Mahomes, and he and I will swing over there and watch a little Formula One. He's been there the last 2 years. I don't know if you know this, but did you know that I think it's Martin Brundle, I think is the, he's like the sideline reporter for F1.
Yes.
And he walks along, the starting grid where they let celebrities go, and he talks to people along the way. And last year, not this year's Miami Grand Prix, but last year he started talking to Patrick Mahomes. The only problem was he was talking to Paulo Banchero.
Yes. I saw it.
Yeah.
I saw it. Somebody showed me the clip. It's hilarious.
Guy can't.
Paulo, to his credit, was very gracious.
Yes, yes. And then he went up to him this year and said, "Paulo." And he goes, "Oh, you know my name this year." And it's like, yes, yes. So he was down there, so he talked to him. I thought that was
great. Yeah, it's funny. That was funny.
All right. Who would you take if you had a choice? Jason Tatum or Markel Fultz?
I'd take Jason Tatum.
Okay. I just want to make sure. Yeah, the Sixers didn't. They thought otherwise.
Yeah, they did. No, they did not. Yeah, they screwed up on that.
Yeah. All right. What's your favorite club in South Beach?
Well, I've never been to one, but I will tell you this quick story. You know who Doris Burke is?
Yes.
And she and Dave Pash are doing your games on radio for ESPN on 810 from this particular series. So the other night, Dave calls, and you know Brian Windhorst from ESPN?
Yep.
I went out with Brian Windhorst, Tim Bontemps, Nick Friedell, Dave Pash, and Doris Burke. And we went to a restaurant in Miami, I guess it's in South Beach, called Casa Tua, which is a, you'll have to look it up.
Okay.
And I called my wife about three times, and I go, I wish you were here, to see what about this restaurant. It kind of surprised us. A friend from the Heat got us in. It's a hard place to get into. Not that I'm trying to drop names here or anything, but I did go to this restaurant. We like Prime 112, great steakhouse in South Beach. Joe's Crab is great in Miami, but this Casa Tua is at a completely different level, and it is unbelievable. And here I'm thinking about my wife, and I look over, and I'm sitting next to Dave Pash.
Yeah.
I said, something's not right here. He goes, "Yeah, I wish my wife were here too. But you've got me tonight, buddy."
Well,
we had a nice time.
I know one thing. I know Pash didn't get the check because he's a Syracuse guy, so no chance that he reached into his wallet.
And you're right, he didn't. I bought drinks first of all, and then he I thought, well, heck, I probably got to. But anyway, I'm with all these grizzly reporters. We had a nice time, and we went to this restaurant. We did not fit in. But boy, was it something else! It was beautiful, and it's called Casa Tua.
That's awesome.
But we like that place. Yeah, and then Prime 112 is great. We went there for the Super Bowl, and the Chiefs were down there, and Belichick and his family. It's a lot of fun. I mean, Joe's Stone Crab is down there. Again, tough reservations to get, but if you are in that South Beach area, those are three good restaurants to try.
Good to know. All right, finally, are you a fan of clam chowder? Yes or no?
Oh God, yes! I love it. I cannot get enough of it. I'll have it. I'll have it at the airport at Legal Seafood when I'm leaving. I'll have it in the press box in Foxborough for Patriot games. They make great chowder, and they got it at the Garden in Boston downtown here. And so, absolutely, I can't get enough. That's a meal in itself. I love clam chowder.
Kevin Harlan, he's a man who loves his chowder.
Chowder.
Yeah, can't get enough
Tommy,
of it.
Tommy loves a chowder.
I get some
hey,
chowder.
Tommy.
Yeah, that is the Boston accent is priceless. It's a keeper for sure. And they love it too. They try to keep it because you can tell Steve Spagnuolo has been out of Boston long enough to drop that, you know, to lose a little bit of it. But he hangs on to it. I think they do it on purpose. Is my personal opinion.
Yeah, I think they do too. Yeah, I think they love it. If you know, Damon and Affleck, you know, those guys, they're always kind of flexing their Boston accent all the time. But it's a great place. Quite frankly, I'm in this Boston-Miami series. They're not two cities I'd rather go to and be a part of. Both of these cities are phenomenal. Miami is incredible. I love Miami, and I love Boston. In fact, I hate to leave today. It's sunny and beautiful, and, you know, they had the big dig here many years ago.
Uh-huh.
They built tunnels to put the freeways underground. It cost them $15 billion and took forever, but what they put on top that when they tore down the freeways are parks. And it's, the green space is gorgeous. Boston is one of my, if not my favorite city, it's 1A. And I feel the same about Miami. These are two great towns. And I have loved being on this series.
Kevin, have a great call. Enjoy it. And we will talk with you soon, my friend.
Thank you, Saran. Always fun. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend.
We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, the Jazz into the hour answer. Since 1990, five players have won a World Series for one team one year and another team the next. I asked for any one of them.
Don Baylor.
Nope.
I always guess Don Baylor, that's not it.
It's never
Jack
that.
Morris?
Jack Morris, 91 Twins, okay. 92 Jays.
Okay, that's
also, Ryan Terrio, 11 Cards, 12 Giants. Jake Peavy, 13 Red Sox, 14 Giants. Ben Zobrist, 15 Royals, 16 right. Cubs. It's his birthday today. Most recently, Jock Peterson, the 20 Dodgers and 21 Braves.
Great place to celebrate this weekend. Jazz, a Louisiana Kitchen. Great live music and, of course, the best Cajun food anywhere around. It's at Jazz, a Louisiana Kitchen, 39th and State Line by the University of Kansas Health System. And, of course, out at the Legends, get you some great Cajun food tonight. Find them online at jazzkitchen.com. First of all, some news breaking here this hour. Adrian Wojnarowski reporting that the NBA's fitness to play panel has cleared K-State forward Keontae Johnson. It'll allow him to be selected in the June NBA draft. So congratulations to him. Johnson had previously been diagnosed with a heart condition at Florida and, of course, collapsed on the floor. And so they've checked him out. They said he's good to go. They have him as a late first, early second. We're seeing 40s.
Mm-hmm. 42, 44.
Second round pick. Looks like he will get drafted. And then also, how about this? Karl Malone had a great collection of Dream Team, you know, the Dream Team
I'd think.
Stuff, including like a Charles Barkley jersey, a David Robinson jersey, shoes, different things that he had. Magic Johnson semifinals jersey. He put it up for auction. If you've heard of the show that's on Netflix with the Golden guy's name is King of Collectibles. King, the Golden Touch is the name of the show. I brought him in. And they auctioned off this thing. It was at one of his car dealerships, so he's not like hurting for cash.
He brought in $5.2 million, including $3,000 for the Michael Jordan game-worn jersey that he wore in the semifinal win over Lithuania, 127-76. It says, to Carl, good luck, Michael Jordan, number nine. Are we really... Like, you're giving that away? I'm not sure.
I wouldn't be able to put a price on that, but yeah. I didn't. I mean, I wasn't
I
the guy
be
that
happy
won.
No. If I were Jordan. See you Monday.